chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Jeff Glassbrenner on the show today. Jeff is an author, keynote speaker, and Paralympian who became the first American amputee to successfully climb Mount Everest in 2016. Well, Jeff, I am so delighted that we could make this work today. I'm so grateful for our mutual friend, Tim Sater, who had connected us. And he said, Lisa, you've got to meet my good friend, Jeff. I can't wait for our listeners to hear your story. And you've got a book here, The Gift of a Day. And I just want to read this right here. This book is written to remind you that each day you have is a choice. Take the gifts that are given to you every day of your life, learn to recognize them as gifts, and take them as your own. And so I know that you have had a lot of defining moments in your life, and some good and some not so good, but you truly have treated every one of those as a gift. And I just can't wait to get started with your story.
Thank you so much for having me on, first of all. And Tim's an amazing guy, and so I'm glad we got to connect. But like you said, every day is a choice. And so it's a hard one. Sometimes you get to choose a good day, and sometimes days are chosen for you, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, take us back to growing up. I know you grew up on a farm. I tell you what, I have interviewed so many people that have grown up on farms, and they're some of my favorite people.
Excellent. Good, hardworking people. Yeah.
But take us back to growing up, and then we'll get into some other things.
Yeah. So growing up in the southwest part of Wisconsin in a small city called Boscobel. And so just growing up like a normal farm boy, helping out with my chores and doing whatever we could. And so I was 8 years old. I was helping my dad, and we were tasked to go out and cut some hay. And so dad and I got the tractor ready. And I remember, you know, going out the driveway, and my mom did her usual, you guys be careful. And we're like, yeah, whatever, mom. So we got into the hay field and start cutting some hay, and we hit a rock, and my dad asked me to go do my usual, which was to get off my safe spot, go around, remove the rock, and get back onto my spot so we could continue. And dad turned it off. I got the rock off, and I went to go get back onto my safe spot. And before I reached there, my dad had turned on the machine, and my leg got caught in the power takeoff. And if you don't know what the power takeoff is, it's on the back of the tractor, spins really fast, very powerful. So it was actually controlling the mower behind us. And so another way to kind of take a look at it is like the tractor was a large pencil sharpener and my leg was a pencil. And so I just remember in that split second, everything changed for me. You know, I remember laying on the ground, being completely confused of what just happened. I remember looking down at my leg and I could see bones sticking out. And I remember looking to my right and I could see my shoe about 10 feet away, you know, with my foot still in it. You know, my dad quickly seeing what happened, turned off the tractor and picked me up. And luckily he had the presence of mind to apply a human hand tourniquet. And so that kind of saved my life, so to speak, because of all the blood loss that was going on.
Mm-hmm. I think somebody came to tell your mom that there'd been an accident and that your dad and you had been taken to the hospital. And she said she didn't know which Jeff it was, because your dad's name was Jeff too.
Right. And so, yeah, so then they took me to the local hospital and they couldn't really treat me because of my condition was a little bit more involved than they normally do. And so I went for an ambulance ride about 70 miles to Madison, Wisconsin. And weirdly enough, it's a small town. And so my uncle actually happened to be the driver of the ambulance. And so it was kind of all in the family going to the hospital. But being in a hospital was pretty hard as an 8-year-old boy. You know, I didn't really know what was going on, you know, what was going to happen to me. I just remember crying to my parents all the time that I'd never be able to run or never be able to swim. And I was really worried about, you know, just being different. And so in the hospital, I was there for 47 days. My heart had stopped on 2 different occasions. So they had to jumpstart me back to life. And, you know, people say, you know, being in the hospital, you know, that must have been really bad, you know, wasn't it? And I'm like, yeah, it was kind of bad, but it was kind of cool too, because anybody that stopped by for a visit, you know, they bring me Star Wars action figures or Star Wars ships. And at the end of that 47 days, you know, my room was looking like the galaxy. So that was kind of fun. But really, things didn't set up for me until I was sent home from the hospital. Then things really changed. You know, I was different. You know, I was the only one in my school that was physically different and definitely felt that way. It felt different. I wanted to fit in as much as I could, and I didn't. And so that was a pretty hard time in my life.
Mm-hmm. You and your siblings are very close.
Yes, very close.
You've gone to, I think, was it the Bahamas for your sister's wedding? Yeah. And your sisters have come and helped at various times. And your siblings came to the hospital to see you.
Yes. And so my sister's still my best friend. And so it's pretty cool. You know, we've gone through life and, you know, had each other's backs the whole time. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool. But that's what it's all about, community and family.
Family, absolutely. So I'm sure the emotions were probably all over the place. I mean, you had sadness from the loss. You had fear of the future. But I told you, I love your mom.
She's a tough cookie, that's for sure. Yeah.
You know, I mean, and this is so hard for a parent to do, but she'd met a lady in the hospital that talked to her about how she might go forward with supporting you. And can you tell our listeners about that?
She told my mom that the biggest enemy of a kid with a disability are their parents. You know, the parents can either choose to do things for them, or they could choose to make them independent. And my mom luckily took the side of making me as independent as possible. I just remember about a month or so after being home from the hospital, just being beside myself, just being totally different, didn't know how to deal with missing my leg. And so I was at the supper table eating and I had to go to the restroom. And so I go excuse myself from the table and I start to go to the restroom and I fall flat on my face. You know, see, from an amputee, from a traumatic injury, it still feels like I have my nerve endings in place. And so even today I can wiggle my toes and shake my ankle. But back then, you know, I didn't really have that mind-body disconnect. And so I went to take that first step thinking everything was fine. And then all of a sudden making it, and it wasn't. I just remember putting my hands in my face, just crying, wanting it to all go away. I wanted be normal again. I wanted my bad day to have never happened. And so I just remember my mom just kind of patting me on my shoulder and kind of getting me up. And I remember the next day she kind of had enough of it. And so I was at the couch watching TV and I remember barking an order into my mom saying, "Mom, can you give me a Coke?" And a couple minutes later she shows up and she's like, "This is the last Coke." I'm like, "Well, can't you just go to town and get some more Coke? You know, what gives?" And she goes, "No, you don't understand. We have plenty of Cokes in the refrigerator. This is the last Coke I'm going to hand to you. From now on, you're going to start doing things on your own and for yourself." You know, she went on to tell me that I was no different than anyone else, except for my negative attitude. And she said that was about to change. And so true to her word, she had never did anything extra special for me that she wouldn't do for anyone else. And so that tough love kind of ensued the rest of my life. And so I'm able to get my own Cokes and do whatever I want.
You're able to do all kinds of things now, you know, and I just think that was such a wise mom. But you know what? Not easy.
No.
Because you said you talked to her later and she said every night she would go in and cry. It hurt her heart so much for you, but she was doing the right thing for you in the long run, Jeff.
Completely. But at the time, she thought that was the hardest thing in the world. You know, she wanted to help me. She wanted to make my life easier because it was hard enough, but she decided that that wasn't the right choice.
Right. Well, we've got so much to talk about. So I want to do a little fast forward here.
Okay.
Your younger sister, Janelle, she was the best athlete, male or female, in the school. She was an awesome athlete. She goes on, gets a scholarship to college, And then you end up thinking, well, I think I'm going to go to college too. So I want to fast forward to when you get there and talk about going down to the bathroom and you meet somebody.
Yeah. So yeah, my sister definitely was the best athlete in school. In high school, she set a scoring record, a single game scoring record of 37 points. And so she was really, really good. And so I always kind of felt like I was sitting on the sidelines, you know, watching her, being her biggest fan, but really always just wanting an opportunity. And so I got that opportunity when I attended University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. I went there for the business school and discovered a lot more. You know, it's a small campus and kind of spread out. And so I had to do a lot of walking to and from class and develop a sore in my leg. And so when I get a sore in my leg, I just take it off and heal it up as quickly as I can. So like a good student, I'm studying away and I have to go to the restroom. And so I'm hopping to the restroom and all of a sudden this kid stops me in the hallway. He's like, "You're missing your leg." I'm scratching my head, you know, thinking, yeah, this guy must have been the valedictorian of his class. You know, we just say the obvious Einstein. But then he's like, "Well, let's go play basketball." And I'm like, "Well, doctors won't let me play any sports. You know, they don't want me hurting myself or anyone else." And he goes, "No, I mean wheelchair basketball." And I'm like, "They play basketball in wheelchairs? Never heard of such a thing." He brought me to the practice and it was pretty amazing, eye-opening experience to watch him play wheelchair basketball for the first time.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And then you decided to go out for the team, right? But here you'd never played before. And I love your coach.
Yeah. So my coach right away from the beginning kind of took me under his wing. I think the biggest thing in life is if you have a mentor. And so right away, he became one of my first real mentors in life. You know, he believed in me right from the beginning. He thought that I was athletic, but I didn't have any skills. I didn't know how to push a wheelchair. I didn't know how to shoot a basketball or even pass. And so he kind of liked it because he said I didn't have any bad habits developed. And so he could teach me the right way the first time. And that was kind of an advantage to some point because he was a lot of the athletes that he has comes to the table, you know, already developed skill set. And so he could teach me the way it was done properly. And so just with a lot of working out with him and a lot of belief in myself, he put the goal in front of me of why just make the team? Why not set the goal higher and try to make the national team? And so that was my goal right from the beginning, even just playing a couple months.
I know he said, if you would meet me here, what, 2 hours, an hour and a half earlier than the rest of the team, I will work with you. And you did. And you like were practicing 4 to 6 hours a day.
Yeah, right away. I remember the first week, you know, I was like, "Oh, this is going to be easy. I finally got a sport. My sister was a natural athlete. I'm going to be too." And the first week it didn't go as planned. I fell on my face a whole bunch of times. I didn't know how to push my wheelchair and my hands were all bloodied up and taped up from pushing my wheelchair. But he's like, "You can do this." And I'm like, "Ah, you know, I thought this would be easy." And he goes, "Well, how do you expect to be good? You know, you've only been playing for a week." He goes, "You're going to have to put in some work." And he kind of egged me on and he's like, "Well, I'll meet you every morning at 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock and I'll teach you the very basics." And so that's how it really got started. And so he was like, "Yeah, we can do this. And I believe in you. And, you know, it looks like you have the talent. So let's go for it."
What a great coach. Coaches can be so instrumental, can't they, Jeff, in a person's life?
For sure. And it's not necessarily just on the basketball court, but it's just like teaching the value of, you know, working hard and the value of waking up and setting those goals. And so, you know, I've taken everything that I've learned from him and fast forwarded it to everything else I've done in my life. And so, yeah, it's very important.
So that was definitely a pivotal point for you. Because then you ended up going on and playing competitively, 3-time Paralympian, 2-time world champion. You got the gold medal twice, bronze in the Paralympics, and bronze 4th and 7th, if I remember correctly.
Yes, we had a few bad breaks. And so you always try for the gold. So anything shy of the gold is not what you wanted. But it was an amazing opportunity. More than just playing on the Paralympics, it kind of opened up my whole world. Farm boy from Wisconsin was now getting to go places. You know, I know a lot of people still from my hometown that have never left the state. And so I've been to 48 countries and 49 states. And so kind of opened up world and it's allowed me to see some great things.
Very good. Well, I tell you what, we need to take a quick break. We've got so much more to talk about, but we'll come right back with Jeff.
Are you a rising IT leader? Could you benefit from a network of like-minded peers? Let me introduce you to the St. Louis Technology Leadership Experience. This one-of-a-kind program gathers cohorts of IT professionals for 3 workshops: peer small group problem solving, one-on-one mentoring by IT executives, and multiple networking events. You'll be prepared for your next steps as an IT leader by gaining core leadership competencies and a strong, powerful network of peers. To apply for our next TechLX cohort, visit tpi.co/TLX.
Well, welcome back. So, Jeff, there's so much more I want to talk about, but I do want to get into a little bit of your mindset. You talk about the gold medal was really a big goal for you. You know, you wanted the gold, but you said you've learned to look for gold medal moments in your life. As I think about you, and we've just touched the tip of the iceberg of this cool stuff that you have done and the goals that you've set. I said, you know, I think it's good to do stretch goals, but yours are like ultra stretch goals, the things that you've done. It's crazy. Talk to our listeners a little bit about even in adversity, finding those gold medal moments.
Well, for me, it started when the doctors told me I couldn't do a lot of things. They said to play life safe and that I'd be okay. And at first, I'm like, okay, I can do that. And then I decided, you know, why should I do that? Why should someone else tell me what I can do or cannot do? And so for me, it's just like the only limits you should place are on yourself, and you really shouldn't place any limits on yourself. And so for me personally, it's just like, I almost use that as fuel to my fire. You know, when someone says I can't play basketball, you know what? I'm going to win a gold medal. When someone tells me I can't run, I'm going to try to do a triathlon. I'm going to try to do an Ironman. And so I just believe it's kind of a mindset. And yeah, the gold medal was an amazing moment for me, but it was more about the journey and putting myself out there, surrounding myself with the right people, that team, and just the ability just to work through anything. And I think that gold medal just represents a lot of hard work. And for me, it's like 6 or 7 hours a day in the gym. You know, I wasn't the most talented person. I can definitely say that, but you wouldn't outwork me. I can guarantee you that. You know, if you were working out 3 or 4 hours a day in the gym, I was working out 5 or 6 or 7, you know, I would do whatever I could to outwork you. And that's the way I've kind of always been brought up from my parents. You know, it's like, if you want it, you're going to have to work for it. It's not going to be handed to you. You know, that gold medal's out there, but it's a long way to get that gold medal. And for me, I enjoy that. Every morning I wake up at 4:30. I'm going for that gold medal every single day. It's not on the basketball court, but it's in life. And so it's those moments that you just kind of like, yeah, I really want this. And so I'll work for it.
Mm-hmm. You've accomplished so much, Jeff. And I just think about people had maybe even a little bit more talent, natural talent, but they didn't have the work ethic to go along with it.
And I was very competitive, you know, the whole time. It's like I said earlier, my sister scored 37 points in a game. I had a really good game too. I have a NWBA scoring record. In the championship game, I scored 63 points and had 27 rebounds. But, you know, just to prove that I'm a team player, not a ball hog, you know, I want you to know that I did have one assist. So very, very important. But the first phone call I made was to my sister, and I said, you know, how many points did you score again in your championship? And she goes, 37. I said, oh, I just had 63. And so it's kind of like one of those things. Like, yeah, I'm always trying to push a little bit harder, and it was pretty cool. But like my dad, you know, he tried to push us to perfection all the time. And I remember I scored 50 points in one game, and I was like, oh, that's pretty good, Dad. And he goes, yeah, but you missed 3 layups. I was like, oh, okay. You know? So it was kind of that mentality of like, you can do it and you can do more, you know? And so that kind of keeps pushing you to be able to excel.
Right. For sure. So at some juncture, you decided, I think I'm going to do an Ironman. I think you were watching the Ironman on Kona, you know, the one that's done in Kona. And you're like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
So you didn't just do one though, Jeff. You've done 25 Ironman.
Yeah, 25 full Ironman distance races. So that's a journey of like 10 years to be able to do that. But in 2010, I did 8 Ironmans in 8 months. And so it was to celebrate me losing my leg when I was 8 years old, 30 years. And so instead of sitting on the couch, kind of feeling sorry for myself and thinking about all the things I couldn't do, you know, I decided, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do. And I'm going to challenge myself and stretch myself to see if I can do this. And I learned a lot about myself. You know, I learned that we are capable of doing so much more than other people thought. So I remember a big moment for me is Ironman Wisconsin. You know, I had a lot of family and friends there. My sister was there. And during that run course, it had me running by the hospital where I spent 47 days of my life fighting for it. The same hospital where the doctor said, no, you can't play any sports, you can't run, you can't do any of that. And so it was cool running by that hospital, looking over my shoulders and thinking, I did it. You know, I proved you guys wrong. You know, not only am I doing sports, but I'm doing a lot of other cool things, you know? And so I think the whole thing is to be able to have those goals and never to place limits on yourself and just always go for it.
And here's the thing. Now, some of our listeners may not know about an Ironman, but this is a big deal. I mean, you're running a full marathon.
Yeah, it starts out in the morning with a 2.4 mile swim. So a long ways, and then a 112 mile bike ride, and then your marathon. And so, yeah, so it's a long day and a long way, but you know, nutrition is the hardest part. And so if you don't get that dialed in, you're going to have stomach problems and you won't have enough energy to complete it or have a good time. So it's all about learning about, you know, what works for you. And so all of us are different and, you know, all of us have our unique abilities and you find it on that race day. I tell you that.
Right. So I'm going to break this down too. For every one of those events, you had to have a different prosthetic.
Yeah. Technology is a big part of everything that I'm able to do. And so, you know, new technology is coming out and it gets more comfortable. When I first lost my leg, you know, it didn't feel right. I was only 8 years old. And so I would grow like every month. And so I had to keep going back. It didn't fit right, didn't feel right. And so I didn't want to wear it. But now the technology is just amazing. It feels as real as it could, I think. It's not perfect, but nothing ever will be. But yeah, with my triathlons and stuff, I have a running leg and a biking leg. And so they're designed for me to run. It's like NASCAR. My leg is designed for me to run like a 9:45 minute mile. And so if I run faster than that, then my gait's off just a little bit. And so it's really cool with the technology to be able to kind of put it all together and see what works for you. And with the technology, I do have to stop every couple miles to change my leg to make sure it's not rubbing or hurting and continue on. So I have a little extra time, but I still do all right.
Do you want to give a shout out to the company in New York that's been really innovative and kind of has been there for you, you know, through that?
So it's A Step Ahead Prosthetics and it's out of Hicksville, New York. Yeah, it's like a big team behind you. And so you're able to go in there and 2 days later, I can get three legs. It used to take me about 4 months to get one leg. And with this team, it's much faster and much more comfortable and higher performance.
And I told you, I love your sense of humor because somebody had said, you know, do you miss your leg? And you said, a lot of people think about what they don't have. And you said, I never think about missing my leg because the way I see it, I've got a few extras.
I have more than a few. I have like 10 extra. Yes. But you have to have a sense of humor. I mean, if you can't take yourself that seriously, you know, life is going to be really hard. And so you got to find humor in everything. I remember when I first got my leg and I was going to defy the doctors and play some sports and I played kickball and I happened to kick the ball with my artificial leg and back then it was held on with Velcro. And all of a sudden I made contact with the ball and my leg went about 20 feet in the air. And yeah, I was embarrassed and kind of like, oh yeah, this is why I'm not supposed to play sports. You know, I about hit one of my friends and it was just different. But technology now is really good. So
I bet everybody was a little freaked out.
Yeah.
By that
so
too,
then someone started laughing. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, good. Please laugh. Yeah. So it's one of those things you can't take it too seriously.
Yeah. Well, I want to get a really important piece, the most important piece in here. You were doing a charity event in Charlotte. The young woman that was running the event, she wasn't that impressed with you at first, was she?
She was not. She actually graduated from Wash U, so in your neck of the woods, so to speak. But yeah, we didn't have a really good beginning. My sponsor at the time made me come and do this. It's called Cycle to the Sea, and it was a fundraiser for Charlotte Institute of Rehab. And I showed up, and I'd never been on a hand cycle, but my sponsor was like, we need someone fit that can do this. And I'm like, all right, I'll come do it. We show up there, and we're supposed to go 200 miles, and we get this Walmart parking lot, and it's raining, downpouring. And my now wife is in charge of this event, and she's like, well, in the interest of safety, we're going to have to move everyone up 5 miles up the road and start there. And I quickly raised up my hand. I'm like, I signed up for 200 miles, not 195. And she goes, well, you can go around the parking lot for 5 miles in the rain, and then we'll load you up with everyone else and take you 5 miles up the road. And so she kind of put me in my place that day and really kind of every day since. But yeah, no, we didn't have a great start out, but I think she knew what she was getting into after that interaction. So
fast forward, and you ended up marrying Elizabeth Smiley. And then fast forward from that, you talk about your two gold medals at home, Grace and Gary. Gavin?
Gavin is 13 and Grace is 15. And so, you know, at first I never wanted kids. I'm like, you know what? I can travel the world and, you know, do all my events and all that. And then all of a sudden my Elizabeth's brother had a child and I held him for the first time. I'm like, this is amazing. You know, maybe we should do this. And then we had Grace and it was this is the most amazing thing. But Grace was born with a rare genetic disorder called mosaic tetrasomy 5P. There's only 5 known cases in the world, you know, not the lottery to win, but you know, one we won nonetheless, you know. And so her genetic disorder manifests itself with lots of seizures and lots of developmental delays. So she'll operate cognitively at about a 3.5-year-old level, and she'll have over 100 seizures a day. We have this aura where we know the seizure's coming on and it's a big, deep breath. And all of a sudden, left arm will start shaking, her left leg will start shaking, her body will start shaking. And it's like someone's taking a light switch and turning my daughter's brain off and she'll go completely limp. And that's when we need to be there to protect her and catch her when she falls. But kind of the most amazing thing to watch her is to come out of that seizure. You know, it's almost the same thing. Left leg will start shaking, left arm will start shaking. And all of a sudden her body will start to come alive and you'll see this big, big smile and she'll say, "I'm okay, I'm okay." And she'll continue on doing what she was doing before the seizure. And so for me, that's one of the coolest things to ever witness in life. You know, we're all going to have bad days. We're all going to have bad things happen to us. But, you know, you might even go through one of life's seizures, you know, but it's just like, I'm okay, I'm okay, and continue on and persevere. And so the most amazing thing is to watch her and be a part of her life and get her to experience different things. And so, you know, she doesn't view that she's any different than anyone else. And I want her to always believe that and just to continue to always strive for her gold medal moments. You know, it's not going to be the same as mine, but it's still going to be a stretch moment. It's going to be something that she can do and she can be proud of herself. So that's one of the coolest things.
Well, you know, that's a perfect segue because I know that you guys went to Denver and you got hooked up with Paradox in Denver, took Grace with you to start climbing. And you said for 2 hours, she didn't have a seizure when she's climbing.
Yeah. So when she's doing a new activity, her brain is more engaged. And so she'll have fewer seizures. So we are an active family, obviously. So we ride bike, we do different things. But when she learns that activity, her brain will learn a way around it and she'll start seizing again. And so this rock climbing was completely new, you know? And so just for 2 hours, it was a slice of heaven. She never had a seizure. It was really cool watching her smile and watching her kind of understand the holds and how to get to the top. You know, she kept, I made it to the top. I made it to the top. So that was the coolest thing and to do that. But I was exposed to climbing and mountaineering from them. They had a trip planned. And 2 weeks later, they were going to go climb this Grand Tetons. And they're like, we had a teammate fall and break his leg. And, you know, we have a spot available. And they're like, well, we know you've never climbed before, but we know you're in shape. Do you want to come with us? In life, you know, there's always invitations. Do you turn one down? I usually try not to. And so a couple weeks later, I went with them and we climbed the Grand Tetons and has spurred my love for climbing mountains and setting bigger goals.
Yeah. And you've gone on to set lots of goals and you've gone on to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, you've climbed Mount Everest and you said that was just the most amazing thing. What, 22,000 feet or something like that, a little over that, right?
29,035 feet. Yeah. So the highest mountain on Earth. And it's a 2-month journey. And so it's almost like life and kind of what we're going through with COVID right now. It feels like there's 2 steps forward and 1 step back. And so when you climb the mountain, you have to do this acclimatization. So you're climbing this mountain about 2.5 times to prepare your body for the thin air up there. And so I just remember going some really difficult times. And I remember getting through the Khumbu Ice Falls where it's super dangerous. You're crossing those ladders, these big seracs are falling down. And I remember one just missing us. And I remember sleeping in my tent and I remember waking up in the middle of the night and I had this condition called chain Stokes. Is when your heart rate lowers and your respiration rate slows and all of a sudden your body just needs to catch up. And in that moment, I thought that I was suffocating. I thought that I was drowning. You know, I thought maybe the doctors were right. You know, I should have played life safe. I shouldn't be climbing this mountain. You know, I have 2 kids and a beautiful wife at home. But then with those hard times, you know, I was lucky that strong words from my father kind of flooded in my mind when I was going through my absolute bottom part at that mountain. He told me when I was 12 years old, dealing with my disability, that I can either choose to be pitiful or I can choose to be powerful, but you can't be both. And so from that moment, you know, I always knew which one I wanted to be, you know. And so the next day I was more determined than ever to see how I could go. And luckily with that, I was able to go on and summit the mountain. being at the top of that mountain was like one of the greatest things. But, you know, none of us stand on any summit all on our own. You know, it takes a great team of people, you know, with us, around us. It was my Sherpas, my family back at home to help me put me on that top. And so I think that's the most important thing you can learn about life is like when you make it to the top, it's important to reach back and bring somebody else up with you because, you know, that's what it's all about. You having other people on the mountain with you, you know, you don't want to be there alone. So no one's on that mountain alone. And I definitely wasn't.
That is so true. Well, Tim wanted me to ask you about climbing Mount Vinson in Antarctica. And he said the bushing froze on your prosthetic. What is this story?
So I have a pin system on my leg. And so when it gets so cold, you know, we had it tested for like minus 40 degrees and it got really cold and all of a sudden it broke off the pin that held it together. And so, you know, we had to come up with some duct tape and we had to come up with some other plans. So that's the thing about being an adaptive athlete or anyone like that is like life is going to throw you some curveballs. You know, how are you going to respond? How are you going to adapt? And so for me, it was just like, all right, this is what I have. This is my situation. You know, how am I going to deal with it? That was one of many obstacles that you have along the way. But some of the reason why I do some of these crazy things, as my wife likes to call it, is like, I want to change people's perceptions. I mean, after I climbed Mount Everest, I was at the airport ready to go home, ready to see my family. I was super excited about seeing them. I look at my ticket and I get seated in the exit row. I'm like, all right, they must have known that I summited Mount Everest. This will be great. You know, so I get there, put my extra legs in storage and get all comfortable in my extra leg room. And all of a sudden the stewardess comes by and she's like, sir, I'm going to have to ask you to move. I was wearing shorts so she could see I was having a prosthetic. And so I said, no, I'm perfectly capable to help out in the event of emergency or an accident. No problem. So she storms off. And a couple minutes later, she looks down at my leg, comes back and looks down at me. And she goes, sir, you're going to have to move. I'm like, ma'am, I just summited Mount Everest. You know, you want me on this spot. You need me on this spot. I can handle it. And she goes, sir, you're going to have to move. So I had to do the walk of shame. You know, I had to get my legs out of the overhead storage bin and walk six rows back and sit there. That's some of the reasons why I want to do this. You know, I want to change her perceptions and other people about what a person with a disability truly can and cannot do. That's one of the reasons that kind of drive me to set the bar high, to, you know, have those goals that normal people wouldn't want to do. And so I don't want to be normal.
Oh, Jeff, you were probably the most capable person on that plane. So Jeff, this is something extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs? And you can have more than one if you want.
Yeah, there are several of them. But the biggest one that comes to my mind is the adaptability to change. How can you adapt to change? I mean, especially what we're dealing with right now with the COVID and different things that are going on in our life. You know, no one recipe is going to work for every single employee or person on your team. And so for me, it's like you have to be able to read the situation and understand that we're all different. You know, what motivates me is not what motivates you. And so we have to have the understanding that if you are adaptable, you can get much more out of your employees, much more out of yourself even. And so it's that adaptable mindset, I think, would be the biggest one for me.
That's awesome. I love that. I don't think anybody has ever said that. That's a new one. So Jeff, you know, I want to give you the opportunity. Now, listen, Jeff is a keynote speaker. You can see he's got so much material. So if anyone would want to book you for a keynote, they could just reach out to you via Team Glass, right? What does Glass stand for?
Grow, live, accomplish, succeed. Yeah, it started my last name. And so when I played wheelchair basketball, my nickname was Glass. And so that was kind of an extension of that. I just think that like the book says, you know, the gift of a day, you know, all of us have a choice in how we wake up and how we see that day in front of us. You know, every night before I go to bed, I think about what I have to do the next day. And so, you know, it's that positive mindset that truly determines the outcome for that next day. And so I have to set goals every day because I want to be successful. I want to be a winner. And so I practice that by setting those goals every day.
Very good. You've got a climb coming up in May, right? Hopefully that everything will go well.
I was supposed to be skiing to the North Pole, but that got canceled due to COVID. But if all things go well, I'll be climbing Mount Denali starting May 10th. And it'll be a three-week climb and the highest point in North America. And so what I'm trying to do is called the Explorer's Grand Slam. There's only 49 people that have ever completed it. And that's skiing to the North Pole and skiing to the South Pole, as well as summiting all the highest points in all the seven continents. So it's called the Explorer's Explorers Grand Slam. So there's no physically challenged athletes on that. So I'm setting that goal to be the first one doing that.
Awesome. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for making the time. This has been so delightful. I seriously think we could have gone like for 5 hours because there's still a lot of things I want to talk about. But thank you so much for taking time to be on the show. I know your story is going to be inspiring. It has inspired me. And so, you know, I got to get my running shoes on and start.
Yes, you do. Let me know when you're going to do that.
Very good. Well, thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you for the opportunity. Hope everyone has a great day.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.